This is a 5-minute sample of ProPilot Podcast. Sign up to get practical application straight talk that you can use on your next flight.
Welcome to the ProPilot Podcast with Mike and Frank. Mike is a 737 pilot for a 121 carrier with a background in human resource training and development. He also has extensive experience developing training for multiple 121 carriers. My name is Frank. I also fly a 737 for a 121 certified carrier. I have a background in human factors and aviation, as well as developing training for airlines. How are you doing today, Mike?
Doing great, Frank. Yourself?
Doing good. Today, we are talking about landing considerations. So, Mike, landing considerations. You're approaching your destination. You know you got to get down at some point. Haven't left one up there yet. What's going through your mind?
Well, Frank, I'm always trying to begin my thought process with what the end goal is. And I want a good, safe landing on the center line in the touchdown zone. And in order to accomplish that, I need to be in a position to fly a nice, stabilized approach, meaning that I'm fully configured, on speed, on the proper descent path, at least 1,000 feet above my point of touchdown. In order to do that, I need to plan my descent in such a way that allows me to lose all the altitude and speed that I have up at 35,000 feet. So, as I'm starting my descent, I want to put myself in a position where I'm approximately 10,000 feet and 250 knots, approximately 30 miles from the airport. And if I do that, I know that I can slow down and go down in order to fly a stabilized approach to a nice landing in the touchdown zone.
And on top of that, if you're not going to make a crossing restriction, let somebody know about it. I can't tell you how many times I've been flying with somebody and they're forcing it down and it's going to be tight. And invariably, we'll make it, but why not give yourself that flexibility of just telling air traffic control, hey, this is going to be close. Do you want us to take a vector or can we be a little bit high? 99% of the time, air traffic control will be fine with that. And if they're not going to be okay with that, they'll give you a vector off of it, but they have to know about it.
And a great piece of advice I got was never accept a clearance that you can't comply with.
Absolutely. And you might not know until you get to that point where you're approaching that crossing restriction, but leave yourself an out. So, Mike, let's say you're flying a light piston twin. You're at altitude. You've been flying there for a couple hours, cold-soaked engines, so to speak, from the outside. What happens if you just yank those throttles back if you want to try to make that crossing restriction?
Boy, I tell you what, you could really cool those engines too quickly. Those engines are sitting there at a pretty good temperature, and as soon as you pull the throttles back, they're going to cool off quickly. So what you really want to do, especially if you're flying a turbocharged aircraft, you want to reduce the power slowly, approximately 1 inch per 1,000 feet as you start your descent. For example, when I was flying part 135, I was flying a supercharged aircraft, and our rule of thumb was to reduce the power about 1 inch of manifold pressure for every 1,000 feet you descend.
We've had this whole conversation, and at least in my mind, it's been in the context of a relatively uncontaminated day. There might be a little bit of mist on the runway, a little bit of mist in the air, but that's not the case. What are some other things that we need to consider?
Well, Frank, anytime you're flying on a runway that's not bone dry, it's going to add some stopping distance that you do need to account for. Now, back in the day when I started flying, we pretty much considered runways to be either dry or wet. And that has just proven over time to be an ineffective and unrealistic way to look at how to calculate your stopping distance. A number of years ago, there was a takeoff and landing performance assessment advisory committee formed by the FAA and industry and Flight Safety International. And the results of this was a combination of not only what kind of contaminant, in other words, what kind of precipitation is falling and how the runway is contaminated, but also pilot observations of braking action reports that are factored together to give you a runway condition code. Now, these runway condition codes will factor your landing distance by several 100% based on the braking action and the contamination level on the runway. For instance, a dry runway, we always want to plan to have about 67% more stopping distance available than we would to actually stop the aircraft. This is just a safety factor. Now, if you think that's going to be good enough for a wet runway, that's not true because you're going to double your stopping distance in order to get an adequate margin.
Boy, that's such a big deal. I remember I took an Archer into Milwaukee Mitchell, which has very, very long runways. And we landed at night, and there was packed snow on the runway, and I couldn't believe how much runway we chewed up in just an Archer, thousands of feet. And it was a very eye-opening experience, that much more significant as your airplane gets heavier. And just a refresher, you know, FAR 91103 says you've got to know exactly what your airplane is going to do when it touches down on the ground. We talked about it a little bit for takeoffs, but understanding your airplane performance is a huge, huge factor if there's anything other than a dry runway.
Thank you for your interest in ProPilot Podcast. Sign up to get practical application straight talk that you can use on your next flight.